Welcome to What is Going Om for new thought from the edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. It's a truism that we all want to live a long and productive life, but none of us wants to grow older. And while we may say age is just a number, deep inside, most of us harbour secret fears and perceptions about the meanings of those words old and ageing. Failing health, cognitive decline, and the feeling of being put out to grass because we're no longer useful or important are things that affect us all. The fact is, age discrimination is rampant in many societies and cultures, and we too are guilty of being ageist simply by having such negative thoughts. But according to this week's guest, we've all got it wrong, for there are many hidden treasures and spiritual benefits that can be found in ageing. Connie Zweig, PhD, is a retired therapist who's known as a guide who can go where others fear to tread. A renowned expert in shadow work, she's co-author of Meeting the Shadow, The Hidden Power of the Dark Side of Human Nature, and Romance in the Shadow, Illuminating the Dark Side of the Soul, and author of Meeting the Shadow of Spirituality. Now, in her latest book, The Inner Work of Age, Shifting from Role to Soul, Connie is reinventing age by showing baby boomers how to master late life from the inside out and learning that aging can be a spiritual experience that takes us across the threshold from role to soul. Connie Zweig, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, lovely to have you, Connie. What an interesting topic you're tackling here. So you've been doing contemplative practices for 50 years. You had a successful career teaching and writing about the shadow. You're a wife and grandmother. You were initiated as an elder by Saging International in 2017, and you're actively practicing the shift from role to soul. At what point in your life and career did you start contemplating the shadow in later life?
Well, that's such a good question. I would say, this is very different for different people. For me, in my late 60s, as I began to consider retiring from my clinical practice, I noticed that I started to feel disoriented and kind of wonder what would be next for me. And I was surprised that I felt that way given all of my psychological and spiritual work. But I realized when I started talking to lots of different people about it that there was a late life identity crisis happening. And I hadn't ever seen that written about before. We all know about the midlife identity crisis. But the late life crisis brings up these essential questions once again: who am I? So that's what was coming up for me. Who am I if I'm not Dr. Connie, the shadow expert, the therapist, the writer? Who am I beyond these roles? And I began to read in the field of conscious aging or positive aging, and I discovered that there was really no literature that included the shadow or the unconscious and its influence over the aging process. And that's when I realized I needed to write another book.
Do you know, I mean, you're so right. Reading the book, I never thought I was an ageist. But I realized that I am. And I realized that it's very, you know, nobody gives us a roadmap for aging, just like they don't give us a roadmap for parenting or grandparenting. We don't know how to deal with that part of our life. I mean, it's not something that we experience as we move through the other phases of life. So it is one of those experiences that can leave you feeling completely, you know, I really don't know what the correct word is, but it can knock you for six when you realise you're in a position and you don't know how to handle it. You don't know how to be. You don't know what to think about it, and you don't know what to do.
Yes, people described it to me in different ways. One said groping in the dark. Another person said she had no GPS, no internal GPS for this time. She wasn't oriented, and she couldn't find her direction north. Other people say they feel purposeless. So, you know, there are different ways to describe this experience, and it's really, in Western post-industrialized culture, where we don't have a rite of passage to become an elder. There are some indigenous cultures that really include that passage and the honoring of this stage of life. But we don't have that in this culture. And so it can be, we feel like we're without a map.
Yeah, incredibly disoriented. Well, the other thing about it is that there are so many experiences that are likely to happen to us at that stage of our life than at any other time. You know, they can all come on at once with the health, cognitive decline, everything. You know, losing our jobs, losing our friends, losing our partners, losing our health. It can all happen.
Yes, it can be really challenging. And those hits can pile up. And that's one of the reasons that I wanted to make this contribution, was to give people guidance for how to turn within and find a kind of refuge inside through spiritual practice and through emotional repair work, so that we could really have the inner strength and the grounding to get through these challenges in a way that we can find fulfillment.
So what are the treasures and the gifts that can be found in aging?
Well, we started to talk about how the roles and responsibilities fall away. And so if I believe for many decades, you know, I am the CEO, or I am the mom, or I am the therapist, or the teacher, or the salesperson, then those roles start to fall away. Let's say we're forced into retirement due to ageism, or we choose to retire from paid work, or we become ill, whatever the reason. And those roles fall away, and the structure of our days falls away. And that can happen for reasons other than retirement, but that's such an obvious one, it's kind of easy to talk about. So if I am not that role, then who am I? And the treasure here is to discover a deeper identity, an identity behind the masks and beneath the roles, an identity that some people would call spiritual. So, for example, this phrase, role to soul, I picked up from the spiritual teacher Ram Dass. I like it because it just says exactly that: shift in identity from doing to being, from achievement to our essential worth. If the words don't work for you, like say soul doesn't resonate, that's fine. You can say this in your own way. You can say spirit or God within or higher self, but the shift in identity brings us a kind of freedom, a freedom from those roles and their limitations, a freedom to be more authentic, a freedom to have our voice in a real way, a freedom from obligation to a different sense of time, to a more flow sense of time. A freedom from image and how we look to other people, to, you know, who we are, and the self-acceptance now of who we are. So there are many kind of treasures that are hidden behind the ageism that we carry as we age. You know, you said you've discovered your own ageism. I had this experience before I wrote the book where I discovered that in myself, and I realized that I wasn't deeply accepting who I am now. And if I can't accept that, then I'm not going to really self-actualize during this time. I'm going to be in denial. And I gave a name to that part of myself that's in denial, the inner ageist. And when we experience that internalized ageism, then we project or we attribute to older people negative qualities. Like my friend, my 89-year-old friend, who said, "I don't want to be with old people. I'm not like them." So he's denying not only who he is himself, but also the value of other older people. And so one of the treasures is a really deep self-acceptance of the value of our life experience and the privilege of becoming old.
You look at other cultures, indigenous cultures, where the older people are really valued. They're looked to for wisdom. We don't seem to, we've lost that in the West. And we don't value old people. And we tend to put a high value on the young. And it's interesting to hear you talk about self-worth, because if we have invested all of our self-worth in our job, you know, our career, our position as a mother or whatever it may be, then, you know, we're not going to pass happily across that line into old age when we don't have those careers anymore.
That's right. Or our appearance, right?
Or our appearance, yeah. Yeah, that's a hard one.
That will change as well. It's a hard one. We live in a youth-worshipping culture, and we get this anti-aging messaging every time we turn on the TV or go to a movie, you know, where there's a lot of condescending comments about older people, or television. So, and that is starting to change a bit now in the media. There's an anti-ageism movement happening now. The World Health Organization is participating. There are little baby steps that are starting to happen, but we swim in it. We swim in this messaging. I don't know what your early childhood experience was, but for me, I had no positive elder as a role model in my childhood. And my father used to make a lot of negative comments about older people. You know, you don't think about it at the time, but what happens as a kid is you internalize that message.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you carry it with you through the lifespan so that you begin to feel doom and gloom as you grow older and think only about decline or uselessness or irrelevance. And I found research out of Yale University that was very startling for me, Sandy. This psychologist at Yale has spent her whole career studying the impact of that, the impact of internalized ageism and the images that we embody from that and how it affects our physical health. She was able to relate it to cardiac health. Our cognitive health, she can relate it to memory in late life. Our will to live and our mental health, and even our longevity. And so when I saw that, I thought to myself, well, there's something we can do about that. If we can become conscious of those unconscious fears and beliefs and images, and this is my work with the shadow, if we can make them conscious, then we can actually change not only our beliefs about aging, but our experience of it. And that's part of what led me to write the book. I realized that I could teach that to people.
Yeah, it's interesting what you said. The thing about when we are no longer, you know, what we used to be, we remember. We remember who we were. We remember what we looked like when we were younger. And it's hard to let go of those images. And when other people meet us and only see what we are now, you know, it's very hard. There's almost this urge to say, well, actually, you know, I'm not this person that you're seeing. I'm this other person that I used to be. The person that we think we are inside still.
Yes, it's the inside that we want people to see. And that's the shift from role to soul.
Yeah.
So that's the shift from doing to being, or from image to essence. And it's difficult to communicate from that place so that other people do see it. But we can learn how to have that essential communication with others so that they can see who we are. And I write about that in the book about illness.
Yes.
A friend of mine was dying of cancer while I was writing the book. And I spent 2 years taking care of her. And we would talk very openly, and we were very transparent with each other. And she looked awful, right? But awful according to whom, right? According to what standard?
Yes.
And we got to this moment where we saw each other as souls. We were souls on a journey together. And we were not these roles of patient and caregiver or even friend and friend. We saw through that to this deeper essential place. And the physical appearance became irrelevant.
One of the pieces in your book that really impacted me and really made me stop and think, I mean, the whole book is very, very profoundly thought-provoking, but were your identify withs. You gave a number of points that if we identify with something like ego, self-image, success, yes, or other midlife values in later life, we miss the opportunities to connect with the shadow and soul. And there was a whole number of those identify withs. Could you, you know, I don't expect you to remember them verbatim, but could you share some of those with them? Because I think they're so succinct, they really put the thing together.
Yeah, so the book is organized around the inner obstacles that keep us from aging consciously and thriving in this stage of life. And I call those inner obstacles shadow characters because they're unconscious in most of us. And shadow refers to the personal unconscious, where we store a lot of repressed or denied feelings and beliefs and behaviors. And so those inner obstacles or shadow characters include things like the inner ageist that I mentioned, mm-hmm, which keeps us in denial from accepting the value of who we are now. If we identify with doing and achievement and success, but we begin to slow down and our work is not, our life is not about our work, but we continue to identify with that, then we feel like a failure. We fear becoming invisible and irrelevant, rather than actually taking the time to contemplate who we are now and what we could do now, what we could contribute. So there are lots of other inner obstacles, and what I did is I presented, so there's an inner obstacle around time. So, for example, if we're stuck in the past, nostalgic, and wishing things were different, then we can't live fully present now. Or if we fear the future, we can't live fully here now. So there are these obstacles that are in the shadow, in the unconscious, around the issues of this stage of life. And then there are the developmental tasks that I offer to overcome each one. And they're practices from psychology and from spiritual traditions that anyone can do that can begin to turn our attention from those old identifications, those old identities, to something deeper. And as that begins to happen, we begin to feel like we become who we always were. We become who we were meant to be. It just got lost in all of the hubbub of midlife empire building, family building, career building, you know, financial security building. And that essential self begins to move forward now as our egos move backward, and we start to be able to let go of the ego's agenda, its effort to control everything, and we begin to see life and experience life very differently.
So what does it mean to be a sage or an elder? I mean, if this is what we are aiming for, what does that look like? And is there a difference between them?
Well, I think it's very individual. No, I think sage and elder can be used interchangeably, but it's very individual what that means. So, for example, I would say that an elder is a stage, not an age. So, in America, when we turn 65, we become a senior and eligible for Medicare. So that's a label that people get that's not related to their inner world or their development. But an elder is not an age, it's a stage. It's an internal quality of awareness that we bring to everything we do. And becoming an elder has to be intentional. We have to actually do the inner work of age in order to make that leap. So for some people, it might mean doing emotional repair work to give and receive forgiveness and complete their relationship unfinished business. And for other people, it might mean completing spiritual unfinished business. Like, let's say they're suffering about a fear of death and going to hell from old religious training. How can they work that through? How can they learn how to believe and feel about the divine or spirit and about dying that really reflects their whole life experience and who they are now? And that helps them prepare for the end in a way that is with awareness, with consciousness. So if we took two people, one is 55, and she's compassionate, and she's in service to something larger, and her heart is open, and she knows how to communicate. And we could say in a way that she's an elder, even though she's only 55. And she accepts her age and all that it means. But someone else could be 85, and he's rigid, and he's bitter, and he's full of regret. So that's not an elder. That's not someone who's been able to process and digest his life experience. So, you know, the inner work of age is about doing a life review and kind of harvesting the wisdom that you've gathered in the moments of your life so that you really can see it clearly. And a lot of these tools are in the book and written in a way that you can kind of do them as you go along. You can take your time and really contemplate it and really come to a moment where you recognize that you're fulfilled. And the fulfilled elder is it's a different blueprint than a senior or an old person who feels regret, remorse, self-hate, doesn't want to be with other older people. That's kind of a long answer for you.
No, it's a very good answer. I mean, and you're right, the book is a very contemplative book. It's not something you can rush through. It encourages you. In fact, you know, I don't see how you could not, other than shut the book and, you know, and not read any further. But you can't not think about this in a, you know, in a way that, yeah, you've got to go in and you've really got to understand that you need to do some work here.
And let's say something for people who are more extroverted and who kind of get their inspiration and their juice from going out, right, into the world or socially with other people. So there's a big chapter on service and activism.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, so the main point there that I'd like to make with you is we do service or social activism, social justice work as an elder differently than we did in midlife or in college. I mean, I remember the protests I went to in college at UC Berkeley. So I'm a different person now in many ways, and I do my social justice work with that awareness.
Yes.
The awareness of age as a social justice issue, of my own shadow issues that I might bring to the situation. But, you know, in my college days, I was sort of doing a lot of enemy making and right-wrong thinking and black-white thinking, and that's not where I am now. So I still engage in social activism, but I do it in a different state of mind as an elder. And with the larger common good, it's not about me. It's not about my ego's agenda. It's about humanity and future generations.
Mm. Yeah, I think we can become a lot more generous and compassionate. We're going to take a short break now, Connie. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with retired therapist, author, and expert on shadow work, Dr. Connie Zweig, about her new book, The Inner Work of Age, Shifting from Role to Soul, which reveals how to use inner work to uncover and explore the unconscious denial and resistance that erupts around three key thresholds of later life. We'll be back with more wisdom from Connie Zweig after the break.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Vox Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Join me every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio for Vox Novus, the new voice.
Mental health. Most people think it means mental illness. Most people are wrong. Mental health doesn't apply to just some of us. It applies to everyone. We're all susceptible to anxiety and depression. They're human conditions. And no person should ever feel embarrassed, ashamed, or be discriminated against for being human. Cracked the Podcast strips away the shame, fear, and stigma by expanding the conversation into areas less often visited, from brain and body chemistry, hormones, food, nutrition, trauma, and the microbiome, to pharmaceutical drugs, psychedelic substances, meditation, visionary experiences, and spiritual awakenings. Cracked the Podcast will explore them all, including the notion that, for many, breakdown can be the beginning of breakthrough. For in the words of singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen, there is a crack in everything. It's where the light gets in. Cracked the Podcast, slaying the dragons of mental health. Join co-hosts Sandy Sedgbeer and Rebecca Shaper on the first and third Thursday of every month at 12 noon Eastern Time.
COVID-19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Welcome back. Connie Zweig, in The Inner Work of Age, you wrote that Ron Pevney, author of Conscious Living, Conscious Aging, had said that for life transitions to become successful rites of passage, they require three steps. Tell us about those three steps.
Yes. The framework of the book is that entering late life is a rite of passage. And we really are lacking rites of passage in Western post-industrial culture, right? We have them early in life, sometimes with birth and christening, bar mitzvahs, graduations. But we don't have that at all for later life. So every rite of passage begins with letting go. Letting go of old forms, old identities, worn-out roles, beliefs, possessions, releasing the past, and then stepping into the unknown. We call it liminal space. So that's the second step. Being with uncertainty for a while, like a butterfly in the chrysalis, you know, it's not yet formed. And then emerging renewed, and in this case, renewed as an elder, revitalized with new purpose as an elder. So those three stages are kind of the framework for the book and for doing the inner work. And there are, you and I were talking about the inner obstacles. There are inner blocks at each step of the rite of passage. So, you know, if we can't let go of an old identity and we just cling to it, like I had a client who was 74, and he just couldn't leave his business. And he was exhausted, and he wanted to be with his grandkids, but he couldn't do it. He couldn't let go. Finally, as we worked together with shadow work, we discovered that he had this inner image of the useless retiree, because his grandfather had just sat in front of the TV for decades later in his life. And this man had internalized that and realized that he would be a useless retiree if he left his company. And as we worked with that more and more, he was able to go part-time. He started a painting class, and then he was able to pass on the business to somebody else and actually love painting and time with his grandkids. So that happens gradually as we let go of those inner obstacles, those internal images that keep us from the letting go stage of the rite of passage. And then the second part, we can get stuck in the uncertainty or the liminality or the formlessness, the unknown. And we can get stuck there in a kind of lethargic way. We can be fearful about making change. And then finally, we can be stuck in the emergence step, where there's no renewal because we don't find direction, or we have too much fear, or whatever it is. So that's kind of the framework. And when I share this with people, I've had so many comments about, you know, I was disoriented, I was kind of groping in the dark. But I've been through a rite of passage before. I've been through adolescence, or I've been through retirement, or even an illness. And I know how to do those three steps. One woman said to me, I feel like I found my internal GPS, because she became oriented to a new direction just hearing this framework. So that's what I mean by that. And part of the reason for writing the book was to give this guidance because it's just not widely available in Western society.
No, it's not. People don't like talking about it. You conducted a number of personal interviews with prominent elders, people like Ken Wilber, Krishna Das, Thomas Keating, Stanislav Grof, and many others. What were their commonalities among all of their thinking, or, you know, was the wisdom that they offered quite different?
Well, the spiritual teachers shared a lot in common. There were Jewish, Buddhist, and Hindu teachers, and they all spoke about the practices that they are doing and how their traditions talk about aging, teach about aging. And what they shared in common was that all of these traditions have always said throughout time that the purpose of later life is spiritual practice. And that it's really time to find, especially with retirement when we're slowing down, it's time to find a practice that fits who we are now. So if you resonate with a particular lineage, let's say Buddhist mindfulness or contemplative prayer or Jewish mystical meditation, whatever it is, if you know you resonate with that, just find a book or find a teacher and pick it up and do your practice so that you feel centered and quiet inside when the challenges of aging come at you. And so they all really spoke about that. But there were other elders I interviewed, like Jungian analysts, for example, who were more psychological and spoke more about the inner work that is emotional, that is about facing mortality and completing relationships, and, you know, not as much about, and connecting to the shadow, you know, so not as much about spiritual practice. You know, Ken Wilber, who's been a friend for a very long time, spoke about his own aging process and how he's lived with chronic illness for a long time and how he can apply his integral philosophy to this stage of life. Father Thomas Keating gave me basically a spiritual life review and a description of his own spiritual awakening, which was very beautiful, and it turned out to be just a couple of months before he died. So it was a very precious gift that he spent that time with me.
Was that something new to you, the spiritual life review?
No, one of the chapters is life review, and one of the points that I make in teaching that in the book is that you can actually do a life review in any dimension. We can do a life review of our body, a life review of our relationships, a life review of our beliefs or our intellectual development, and we can do a spiritual life review. So it can have so many different dimensions. And it's a beautiful process. I was really surprised when I did it, Sandy, to make the discoveries that I made. I really didn't expect to enjoy it so much. Mm-hmm. And it was, it allowed me to move toward an acceptance of the way that my life has unfolded and a real gratitude for it.
How much did writing this book transform, you know, your own beliefs?
Well, I would say I was not an elder before I started the book. It was about a four-year journey, and I would say that I didn't know very much about my own internalized ageism. I didn't know very much about the whole positive aging community that exists around the world. I didn't have a sense of what it meant to be an elder before. So I had my spiritual practice before, which continues, and my shadow work, which continues. Those are my two main practices. But the process of writing the book, doing the interviews, talking to hundreds of people, teaching workshops, has really been transformative for me, and I'm deeply grateful for that.
You offer a shadow work handbook for aging consciously towards the end of the book. It strikes me that in the same way we go to school to educate ourselves, you know, for our life ahead and the work we're going to do, that when we retire, you know, we should also have an opportunity, you know, to go, you know, maybe to a local community centre or something and be able to have a positive ageing, you know, course that we can take to help reorient us.
Wouldn't that be fabulous?
Wouldn't it just?
Yeah. I don't know. There are programs online now. There are both conferences and workshops online. For example, Saging International, which is SAGE-ING, which is the community that initiated me into elderhood, is holding a big conference online in October. I think it's the last weekend in October, with lots of wonderful speakers. There's also a group called Elders Action Network, which is for more politically active, socially conscious elders who want to get engaged. They're doing fabulous stuff online, so it's international. And, I could go on and on. There's a lot that's happening now online in the positive aging community, but not in the conventional institutions. Like you said, you know, could I go to a school and a classroom? I don't think that's happening too much.
No, it should be. And maybe, you know, the perfect thing is for people to be trained by you based on your shadow work handbook, and then they can go out, and that's their gift to society, is to help others make this transition.
Well, one of my hopes is that psychotherapists by the book, or caregivers, people in the world of senior living, people who are working with elders in their practices or in their institutions, because they could then work with their clients to take these steps through the rite of passage. And that's kind of how I would envision this being multiplied. I've got a few events here in Los Angeles, you know, with therapist organizations, but I don't know how to do that on a wider scale.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? Because, I mean, these things that we most need, like, you know, having a manual for how to be a parent, how to be a grandparent,
yes,
you know, how to be an elder, are so critical.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah. Well, maybe somebody will say, you know, I'm going to start a different kind of coaching organisation where we can actually offer coaches to help people make this transition from one phase of life to another. We've got about about 7 minutes left. Tell me, what do you think that we can do as a society to, shift the perceptions, shift the psychology around this?
I think that, as I mentioned, there is an anti-ageism movement happening. But I would say that, you know, ageism is the last acceptable ism, right? The racism and homophobia and ableism and all these other isms are kind of out of the closet now. And what I saw during the COVID pandemic in the States here was very disturbing. There was a lot of ageist commentary about older adults in nursing homes and, you know, how they should be treated during the pandemic. So it was disturbing. So I think what I, you know, what I would say is that ageism needs to be taught in our healthcare system, not just gerontology, which is, you know, how to treat the older body, but how to treat the psychology of older people. In the States here, there's a terrible lack of geriatricians who are the specialists in this area. I think there's maybe 1,000 in the whole country. And so in the field of medicine and healthcare, it's a big missing piece. And I would say the same is true in the training of psychologists and psychiatrists. It's, even if people have one gerontology class, they don't learn what I'm writing about, which is how to actually help people become elders, how to guide them through this longevity that we've all been given now, this unprecedented stage of life in human history. And there's no sort of guidance about how to assist people across the threshold to become an elder and to thrive. So as the health span catches up with the lifespan, as people stay healthier longer and longer into their 80s and 90s now, we really need new training and new guidance about the development that's possible, the emotional and spiritual development that's possible at this time, about how to do our psychological and spiritual practices, how to transmit them to other people. And even if it's only in a family, you know, how do you sit down with your grandmother and honor her as an elder? How do you open that conversation?
Yeah. How do now, you?
Yeah. Now, some grandparents, you know, just love to tell their stories about their lives, and that's a part of it. But now people are making videos about their stories and leaving that legacy for the family. Mm. People are finding new creative outlets in their late life and leaving those objects as legacies for the family. I have a lot of paintings by my mother in my house. So there's all kinds of ways to kind of think about this creatively as families and as institutions, and as experts in every field. And I think kind of integrating it into every field of study is really important.
And, you know, and there's another interesting thing. I mean, I was thinking as you were talking earlier about role models and, you know, the kind of images that we carry because of what we grew up with. Baby boomers, you know, my generation, your generation, we didn't have great images of, you know, the elders in our life at that time. I mean, they would have been born in the 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever. But we have an opportunity now to create new role models for the future generations.
Exactly. So I'm aware when I'm with my grandkids that I'm actually modeling for them what it is to be a person in your 70s. Yeah. They're unconsciously internalizing that from me and seeing me thrive and write a new book and really enjoy myself. It's having an impact on them, even unknowingly. It's having an impact on them, which I didn't experience as a child. I didn't have any positive modeling like that. So that in itself is a gift because they will grow up differently.
Yeah, they will grow up differently. They'll grow up in a completely different culture. I love the fact that so many companies are now embracing, you know, older people, beauty companies, cosmetic companies, fashion companies even. It is beginning slowly yes, to open up.
Yes, there's some magazines who've now agreed not to use the word anti-aging. Mm-hmm. models who are in their 70s and 80s now who are just radiating beauty. And so, you know, the messaging is starting to change. I don't think it's on a grand scale, but I think it's beginning. And there's even an age justice movement in the U.S. that's happening now. So there are steps that are being taken. And we also see a lot of elders in the political world in Europe and the U.S. You know, whether or not we like their politics, we actually see them energetic and inspired and, you know, fighting for the common good.
You quoted a lot of startling statistics in the book. You know, what is happening in the workplace? Well, you know, we hear these little bits here and there, but I've not seen it happening, you know, as a real cultural shift in the workplace of employing and valuing the experience of older people. There's a lot of companies that still only want the young.
Yes, you know, my husband and I were watching a new show on Netflix last night called The Chair, which is about a chairman of a department at university. You know about that?
Yes.
So much ageism in the show. I mean, they're really kind of exposing how older faculty members are treated and how much they want them to retire and be pushed out. So I don't know the stats off the top of my head now, but what I know is that in the U.S., there are 10,000 baby boomers turning 65 every day. And so that's having a tremendous impact on the workplace. Some are retiring and some are not. Some are forced out and some are staying, whether because they love their careers or for financial needs. But that's having a big impact. And in the U.S., what seems to be happening is that now there's a generational battle for resources. So the younger people want the jobs and they don't want, you know, the social safety net for the older people because it's reducing it for them. And that whole framework of sort of, you know, have and have not, the pie is too small, is very difficult. It's very sad for me because the healing needs to come through the generations working together now on the larger causes, you know. And that is happening with climate change. I just saw Jane Fonda, who's 83, get together with Greta Thunberg and form a new organization for elders to fight climate change.
Beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, the intergenerational stuff is happening in many ways with mentoring and volunteering and stuff. So it's sad to me that there's this kind of battle over resources in the way that people are defining it. But, you know, it's complicated. And most people do not have the tools for this time of life to really learn about themselves and deepen their self-knowledge and discover how to thrive now, just as we've been saying. And so that's really what I hope that my book will contribute in a small way.
Oh, believe me, it does. I mean, it's one of the most thought-provoking books that I've read in a long time. And very helpful. It's made me look at, you know, the elders in my life a little bit more closely, and also myself.
Well, thank you, Sandy. I so appreciate your comment.
Well, Connie, thank you so much for joining us. I mean, it really is a very timely book. And as I say, it's not just for baby boomers. I think all of us should be reading this book and, you know, rethinking our perceptions about age. I know many, many of my friends would so much benefit from your book. And, you know, I was going to ask you, where should people start? Well, I don't think there is a better place to start than to go and read your book. Yeah,
Thank you.
A perfect place. Connie Zweig, thank you so much for joining us today.
Much appreciated.
Thanks. The Inner Work of Age, Shifting from Role to Soul by Connie Zweig is published by Park Street Press, a division of Inner Traditions. And believe me, it really is a profoundly thought-provoking book that offers shadow work and many diverse spiritual practices to help you break through denial to awareness, move from self-rejection to self-acceptance, and repair the past to be fully present. You can find out more information about Connie's other books, you can read her blogs, and you can sign up for her workshops at conniezweig.com, conniezweig.com. That's it for tonight's show. I'll be back at the same time next week with another edition of What Is Going On. Till then, it's goodbye from me.